The year is 1787. 55 men, delegates from 12 of the 13 nascent American states, gather in a sweltering Philadelphia State House. They are tasked with a monumental challenge, forging a new framework for a nation that has just cast off the shackles of monarchy. Among the most contentious issues tearing at the fabric of their fledgling union is the question of representation. Large states, like Virginia, with their sprawling populations, argue vehemently for a legislative body where their greater numbers translate into greater power. Small states, like Delaware and New Jersey, fear being swallowed whole, their voices silenced by the sheer weight of their more populous neighbors. The air is thick with tension, compromise seems a distant dream, and the very future of the United States hangs precariously in the balance. It was in this crucible of disagreement that the American legislative branch, specifically the United States Congress, began to take its distinct shape. The solution, known as the Great Compromise or the Connecticut Compromise, was an ingenious political invention. A bicameral legislature, meaning a lawmaking body composed of two separate chambers. This innovative structure, outlined in Article I of the U.S. Constitution, was designed to reconcile the competing demands for both proportional and equal representation, thereby ensuring that both populous states and less populated ones had a significant voice in the national government. Let us begin by dissecting this dual-chambered structure. On one side, we have the House of Representatives, often referred to as the lower chamber, though its power is far from subordinate. Its design was a direct response to the Virginia Plan, championing representation based on population. The intention was to create a legislative body closest to the people, its members directly elected by the citizens and thus keenly attuned to their immediate concerns. Today, each of the 435 voting members of the House represents a specific congressional district within their state, with the number of representatives allocated to each state determined by a nationwide census conducted every 10 years. This decennial count ensures that as populations shift and grow, so too does the distribution of representation in the House. These representatives serve for a mere 2 years, a short tenure deliberately chosen by the framers to keep them frequently accountable to their constituents. This constant electoral cycle means that House members are almost perpetually campaigning, their ears pressed to the ground, listening to the needs and demands of the people they serve. To qualify for this role, an individual must be at least 25 years old, a U.S. citizen for a minimum of 7 years, and an inhabitant of the state they wish to represent. The House also holds several unique and significant powers. All revenue bills, meaning legislation related to taxation, must originate in the House, a nod to the principle that those who directly represent the people should be the first to propose how the people's money is collected. Furthermore, the House possesses the sole power to impeach federal officials, a formal accusation of wrongdoing that can lead to removal from office. Should the Electoral College, the body that formally elects the president, fail to produce a majority winner, the House of Representatives is also responsible for electing the president. Across the Capitol building, literally and figuratively, sits the Senate, often called the upper chamber. This body was the concession to the small states, directly addressing their fear of being overshadowed. Following the New Jersey Plan, the Senate guarantees equal representation for every state, regardless of its size or population. Each state, from the sprawling plains of Texas to the compact coastline of Rhode Island, sends 2 senators to Washington. This means that California, with its nearly 40 million residents, has the same number of senators as Wyoming, with its population of under 600,000. This equal footing ensures that smaller states maintain a powerful voice in national policymaking, acting as a crucial check on the potentially overwhelming power of more populous states. Senators serve for 6-year terms, significantly longer than their House counterparts. These terms are staggered, meaning that approximately 1/3 of the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years. This staggered system was designed to provide continuity and stability within the legislative process, preventing radical shifts in policy with every election cycle. the framers envisioned the Senate as a more deliberative body, a saucer in which to cool the hot legislative tea often brewed in the more volatile House. To serve in this esteemed body, one must be at least 30 years old, a U.S. citizen for a minimum of 9 years, and an inhabitant of the state they represent. The Senate also possesses distinct and substantial powers. It holds the crucial responsibility of advising and consenting to presidential appointments, including cabinet secretaries, ambassadors, and federal judges. This means that the president's choices for these powerful positions must be approved by a majority of senators. Furthermore, the Senate is responsible for ratifying treaties with foreign nations, requiring a two-thirds vote, and it holds the sole power to try federal officials who have been impeached by the House, acting as a high court for such proceedings. Beneath the overarching structure of these two chambers lies a complex and indispensable leadership system. In the House of Representatives, the most powerful figure is the Speaker of the House, chosen by the majority party. This individual not only presides over the House but is also second in the line of succession to the presidency, after the Vice President. Both the House and Senate also have majority and minority leaders, who serve as the principal strategists and spokespersons for their respective parties, guiding legislative priorities and rallying support. Whips, another critical leadership position, are responsible for counting votes and ensuring party discipline, making sure members vote in line with their party's stance. In the Senate, the Vice President of the United States serves as the President of the Senate, though this role is largely ceremonial, with the significant power to cast a tie-breaking vote. When the Vice President is absent, the President pro tempore, typically the most senior senator of the majority party, presides. Much of the real work of Congress, the nitty-gritty details of policy and legislation, happens not on the grand floor of either chamber, but within its intricate committee system. Imagine these committees as specialized workshops, where members, often with expertise or a particular interest in a specific policy area, can delve deeply into issues. This system allows for a division of labor and a greater degree of specialization, making the immense task of governing a complex nation manageable. There are several types of committees. Standing committees are permanent bodies, each dedicated to a specific policy area such as appropriations, which handles government spending, or the judiciary, which deals with legal matters. Most bills, upon introduction, are immediately referred to one or more of these standing committees based on their subject matter. Then there are select committees, temporary bodies established for a specific purpose, perhaps to investigate a particular event or issue. Joint committees, as their name suggests, are composed of members from both the House and the Senate, often formed for oversight or research. Finally, conference committees are temporary joint committees convened when the House and Senate pass different versions of the same bill. Their crucial role is to reconcile these differences, hammering out a single, compromise version that can then be voted on by both chambers. The legislative branch, beyond its structural elegance, performs a multitude of critical functions that underpin democratic governments. Foremost among these, and indeed its defining characteristic, is lawmaking. This is the power to enact legislation that governs every facet of national life, from healthcare provisions and the intricate details of taxation to defense policies and environmental regulations. Article I, Section 8 of the Constitution explicitly enumerates these powers, granting Congress the authority to lay and collect taxes, borrow money, regulate commerce, declare war, and crucially, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers, often referred to as the elastic clause. This latter power provides Congress with significant flexibility to address unforeseen challenges and evolving societal needs. Beyond creating laws, Congress serves as a vital conduit for representation. Members of Congress are not simply abstract lawmakers. They are representatives, embodying the interests of their constituents. This takes several forms: geographic representation, where members advocate for the specific needs and concerns of their district or state; substantive representation, where they represent particular policy views or ideological positions; and sometimes, descriptive representation, reflecting the demographic characteristics of their constituents, though this is not always achieved perfectly. Another indispensable function is oversight. Congress has a fundamental responsibility to act as a watchdog over the executive branch and its myriad agencies. This involves ensuring that laws are being faithfully executed, that government funds are being spent efficiently and lawfully, and that the executive branch is not overstepping its constitutional bounds. This oversight takes many forms: committee hearings where executive branch officials are questioned, rigorous investigations into potential misconduct or failures, and most importantly, the power of the purse, which allows Congress to control government spending through the appropriations process, effectively dictating how much money executive agencies receive and how they can spend it. Congress is also a central pillar in the elaborate system of checks and balances designed to prevent any single branch of government from becoming too powerful. It acts as a powerful counterbalance to the executive branch, with powers such as approving presidential appointments and treaties, the ability to override presidential vetoes with a two-thirds vote, and the ultimate power to impeach and remove a president from office. Similarly, it checks the judicial branch by creating lower federal courts, determining their jurisdiction, confirming judicial appointments, and even impeaching federal judges. The budgetary function is another critical responsibility. Congress is not merely a spender of money. It is the ultimate authority for authorizing government spending and raising revenue through taxes. The annual budget process, a complex and often contentious negotiation, involves allocating funds to various government programs and agencies, shaping the priorities and capabilities of the entire federal government. Furthermore, congressional debates, hearings, and public statements serve a vital role in public education and deliberation. These forums bring important issues into the national spotlight, fostering public discussion and debate on policy choices, allowing citizens to understand the rationale behind laws and the various perspectives on pressing national concerns. Finally, and often overlooked, is the crucial function of constituent services, often referred to as casework. Members of Congress and their staff regularly assist individual constituents with problems they encounter with federal agencies, whether it's navigating Social Security benefits, dealing with immigration issues, or addressing veterans' affairs. This direct interaction helps build trust and demonstrates accountability to the people they serve. Now, let us delve into the intricate dance that transforms an idea into a law, the lawmaking process itself. It is a journey fraught with potential pitfalls, designed to require broad consensus and careful deliberation. The process typically begins with the introduction of a bill. Any member of Congress, in either the House or the Senate, can introduce a bill, though revenue bills, as mentioned, must originate in the House. These bills are not typically conjured out of thin air by a lone legislator. They are often drafted with the help of legislative counsel, policy experts, interest groups, or even executive branch agencies. Once introduced, the bill is assigned a number H.R. 1 for a House bill, S. 1 for a Senate bill, for example, and then referred to the appropriate standing committee or committees based on its subject matter. This is where the committee system truly shines. The bill enters its specialized workshop, often first sent to a subcommittee for detailed study. Here, public hearings may be held, allowing experts, stakeholders, and interested citizens to provide testimony. The subcommittee members then engage in what is known as markup sessions, painstakingly reviewing and revising the bill word by word, paragraph by paragraph, often making substantial changes. If the subcommittee approves the bill, it then returns to the full committee, which can further amend, approve, or, crucially, reject it. If the committee approves the bill, it reports it favorably to the full chamber, usually accompanied by a written report explaining its purpose, its anticipated effects, and any dissenting views. Once a bill is reported out of committee, it moves to the floor of its respective chamber for debate and a vote. The procedures differ significantly between the House and the Senate. In the House, the Rules Committee plays a pivotal role. This powerful committee sets the terms for debate, dictating how long members can speak, whether amendments can be offered, and under what conditions. This tight control is necessary to manage the legislative agenda of 435 members. After debate, a vote is taken, and a simple majority 218 of 435 members is required for passage. In the Senate, the atmosphere is generally more open and less controlled. Senators can often speak for extended periods, a freedom that gives rise to the infamous filibuster. A filibuster is an attempt by a minority of senators to delay or block a vote on a bill by continuously speaking, effectively holding the legislative process hostage. To overcome a filibuster, a cloture vote is required, which needs the support of 60 senators. This high bar means that a determined minority can often thwart the will of the majority in the Senate. Amendments can be offered by any senator during floor debate. Despite the potential for filibusters, once debate concludes, a simple majority 51 of 100 members is required for a bill's passage. Should a bill successfully navigate one chamber, it then embarks on its journey to the other chamber for consideration. The second chamber can choose to pass the bill as is, demonstrating broad agreement. More often, however, they will amend it, proposing changes they believe improve the legislation or better reflect their constituents' interests. They can also, of course, reject it outright. If the House and Senate pass different versions of the same bill, a common occurrence, a critical step involving a conference committee becomes necessary. This temporary joint committee is composed of members from both chambers, specifically tasked with reconciling the differences between the House and Senate versions. They negotiate, compromise, and ultimately produce a single, unified bill. Once this compromise version is reached, both the House and the Senate must approve it without any further amendments. This final vote on the conference report is often a high-stakes moment, as it represents the culmination of extensive negotiations. Once a bill has successfully passed both chambers in identical form, it is then sent to the President of the United States. The President has several options. They can sign the bill into law, thereby formally enacting it. They can also veto the bill, sending it back to Congress with their objections and reasons for disapproval. Another option is the pocket veto. If Congress adjourns within 10 days of sending a bill to the president and the president does not sign it, the bill automatically dies. This effectively allows the president to kill a bill without explicitly vetoing it, as Congress cannot then override the veto. Finally, if the president does not sign or veto a bill within 10 days excluding Sundays while Congress is in session, the bill automatically becomes law without the president's signature. Should the president veto a bill, Congress still has one final recourse. They can attempt to override the veto. This requires a two-thirds vote in both the House and the Senate. If successful, the bill becomes law despite the president's opposition, a powerful demonstration of legislative will. Despite the careful design and intricate processes, the legislative branch is far from a perfect institution. It is a constantly evolving entity, subject to ongoing debate and criticism. One of the most pervasive criticisms today centers on partisanship and gridlock. Many observers contend that increasing political polarization makes it incredibly difficult for Congress to reach the necessary compromises to pass significant legislation, leading to frustrating legislative gridlock where crucial issues remain unaddressed. The influence of money and lobbying is another perennial concern. The vast sums of money flowing into political campaigns and the powerful lobbying efforts by well-funded interest groups raise questions about whether the legislative process truly reflects the will of the people or whether it is unduly swayed by special interests. The filibuster in the Senate is a frequent flashpoint of contention. Proponents argue it is a vital tool for protecting minority rights and forcing broader consensus, preventing a simple majority from steamrolling the opposition. Critics, however, argue that it allows a minority of senators to obstruct the majority, paralyzing the legislative agenda and making it nearly impossible to pass meaningful reforms. Gerrymandering, the practice of drawing congressional district boundaries in a way that favors one political party over another, is also highly controversial. This manipulation of electoral maps can lead to uncompetitive elections, districts that do not accurately reflect the overall political leanings of a state, and a lack of accountability for elected officials. Public approval of Congress often hovers at remarkably low levels, reflecting widespread dissatisfaction with its performance, perceived inefficiencies, and apparent inability to address pressing national issues. Finally, there is an ongoing debate about the balance of power between the executive and legislative branches. Some argue that the executive branch has accumulated too much power, often because Congress has been willing to delegate its authority, particularly in foreign policy and national security. Others contend that Congress simply fails to assert its constitutional prerogatives effectively, allowing the presidency to grow unchecked. Understanding the legislative branch's intricate structure, its vital functions, and the often arduous journey of a bill becoming a law is not merely an academic exercise. It is essential for comprehending how public policy is forged in a democracy, how the will of the people is or is not translated into governance, and how the delicate balance of power within the federal system is maintained. The challenges and debates surrounding Congress highlight the dynamic and often contentious nature of legislative politics, a testament to the ongoing struggle to perfect the art of self-governance.